Hello and welcome to Awaken the Healer Within. I'm your host, Jason Prawl, and with me now I have Dr. John Douillard. He brought Life Spa back into life in 1994, started as a small Ayurvedic clinic and Panchakarma retreat center. And while it doesn't do Panchakarma retreats anymore, it has really grown to become one of the biggest Ayurvedic sites online. And he's got an online database containing over 1,000 articles and videos, providing ancient medicine using modern science, as well as an online store providing a multitude of Ayurvedic remedies, herbs, and supplements. Life Spa is located at the base of the Rocky Mountains in sunny Boulder, Colorado. And I first got familiar with Dr. John through one of his cleanses that I did, his Colorado Cleanse, which is a really easy thing to go through that just walks you step by step through some of Ayurveda's principal ideas and ways to sort of cleanse the body. So Dr. John, welcome.
Thanks, Jason, for having me. Appreciate it.
So I'm curious, you didn't start out as an Ayurvedic practitioner, I think, right? You were a chiropractor, you did some sports medicine stuff. How did you find yourself venturing into Ayurveda and really having that sort of lead your path?
Yeah, you know, I was in chiropractic college and I was studying acupuncture actually, and I heard the word Ayurveda and I was somehow, I don't know, the word just connected with me and I needed to know what it was. And this was 1980 and there was no Ayurveda in America in 1980 to speak of. So in 1986, I had a chance to go to India for about a 3-4 week vacation to try to learn Ayurveda, you know. So I went there and ended up finding a teacher who took me in, sort of like a grandfather kind of figure to me. So I studied with him for about a year and a half. And then I met Deepak Chopra there in India. And he was starting his career at that time too. And he was starting an Ayurvedic center back in the States and asked me if I'd come back and run it for him because I just finished all this training. And I said, yeah, sure. I had nothing else to do, you know. So I came back and he was training a lot of medical doctors. So I actually started teaching medical doctors. And that's when I sort of put the two together, the ancient, you know, Ayurvedic medical wisdom, which is time tested, used for thousands and thousands of years, still used today. And I had to as I was teaching medical doctors, I had to find science to appease them and to bring it together. So that's what launched me into the whole ancient wisdom, modern science thing, which now we do at lifespa.com, which we just write articles about, you know, the ancient medical wisdom and the science. Because science alone, as you know, right, you know, coffee's good, coffee's bad, can prove whatever it wants. Soy is good, soy is bad. It really isn't reliable unless you really read a lot of the studies and make your own decision. Where if you have something that's been around for thousands of years or hundreds of years and time tested, still being used in practice today, and you have science to back it up, I feel like we should at least know about that. That's something I feel like we should at least talk about because it's got something that's been around for a while and it's got the science to back it up. So that's what we do at lifespa.com. That's my thing. I feel like I finally found what I'm supposed to do for a living. And that's what I just love to do is dig in and kind of make some of this ancient wisdom and translate it into English for folks.
Well, as on the receiving end of your work, I think you've definitely found your calling as well. And you know, it's one of the things I love about Ayurveda is that it's so contextual, right? You mentioned soy is good, soy is bad, coffee's good, coffee's bad, wheat's good, wheat's bad. And it really is the context, right? The body that's in front of you, the age of the person, the time that they're doing these things or eating these things, the season, there's so many things. And this is one of the things that I so much love about Ayurveda that really kind of clicked for me as soon as I started learning it. It's like, they actually made sense of this stuff, where I still find in the West, even though our science is so profound and we're able to see such small things, sometimes we still miss the forest of the trees and we're not understanding context in which we're studying these things. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, you know what's also neat about it, Jason, is I started writing and putting articles on the web back in 2010 or 11 or something like that, I think. And I can pull those articles out today and they're still on my website and I read them and they're still accurate. They still work. You know, that's the neat thing about Ayurveda. Veda means truth. It means it doesn't change. So I don't have to go back and go, oh God, I said something that was grains were bad and now they're good again. And, you know, coffee was good and now it's bad again. You know, I don't have to go back and do that because you're based on something that's thousands of years old. It's not going to change ever. Definitely not in 10 years, where most you know, in the world of natural medicine, it's changed so dramatically, you know, that you can't go back 10 years and say the same thing anymore because it would be inaccurate. And that's kind of the neat thing to hold your hat on and go, wow, this is a pretty cool thing.
I agree. I was going to say, like, you know, when I started off in this field of health and I was trying to help people, I mean, of course, you get into this to really make a difference and be of service. And I remember writing articles. And of course, as any person, I have my belief that I'm setting out for, right? It's hard to find somebody without any bias whatsoever, right? So I'm writing an article and I had essentially a premise and a conclusion in my mind already that I wanted to convey. And then what I did was I'd just go find research that would back me up. And this is the funny thing about science is that it doesn't agree. Even though we think it agrees, you can go find research to back up any position that you might hold in today's world. So this is the funny thing. And it was through that process that I recognized, oh man, like this is not a good way to do this because I can literally find anything that's going to support my thesis. And so it convinced me to find another way to form my own thesis and to challenge my own ideas. But I want to share how I got into Ayurveda because it was kind of a funny way. And it was actually through modern science. It was through circadian biology. You know, this is one of the hot topics in the last maybe 10, 15 years. They gave out a Nobel Prize recently for this, through our understanding of how the body is sort of timed. And we have these clock genes and all that. We've got an amazing scientific map for this idea that hormones and the liver and all of our organs and cells are guided by these daily and actually even larger and smaller rhythms. And I thought, wow, this is amazing. And then I stumbled across Ayurveda and they're talking about these same things, these cycles that are going on daily, seasonally, and even of course over our entire life. So maybe that would be a cool place to start because there's a million places we could start. And I do want to cover a lot of the basics here for people who are not familiar with Ayurveda, but maybe just introduce me to this concept of sort of seasons and how Ayurveda approaches this, because it's a conceptual framework that is applied many different ways. And I think it's so fascinating.
You know, circadian medicine, as you said, is Nobel Prize winning science. From the Ayurvedic perspective, it's Ayurveda 101. Actually, I did a course with Yoga Journal called Ayurveda 101. It's all about circadian rhythms, daily cycles, seasonal cycles, light, dark cycles, and how Ayurveda was all about, you know, the science of life, how to live in sync and go downstream with those natural cycles. You know, birds fly south, whales migrate, leaves turn red, fall off trees. Everything in nature is connected to those rhythms. So are we. We just didn't get that memo, you know. And the thing that sort of, I wrote a book back in 2000 called The Three Season Diet, which is all about eating with the seasons. There's four seasons. I know that. People think I don't know that, but there are four. But there are three growing seasons, a spring harvest, a summer harvest, and a fall harvest for winter eating. Nature takes a, you know, is dormant for a season, takes a rest. Everything's based on cycles of rest and activity in nature. So that's the resting cycle. So that's the three season idea diet. So nobody really read that book. I mean, it did okay, but the knowledge was just so compelling. So then I read this study. It was about deer who eat bark in the winter, and they have certain bugs in their gut that help them digest bark in the winter. And they have different bugs in their gut to digest leaves in the summer. And then when they actually gave the deer the bark in the summer, it had the wrong bugs for digesting bark. That caused such a level of indigestion, it almost killed the deer. And I was like, are you kidding me? Wow. Deer potentially die when they eat out of season? And we have no idea what's in the season. We've eaten the same processed foods, can stay on the shelf for a year, you know, for decades now. We have no connection. And then studies started, I sort of dug in and started finding studies to show that first the bugs in the soil change from season to season. There's a massive microbial surge every spring. And then those bugs attached to certain roots of the certain plants. And then there were hunter-gatherer Hadza tribe studies that showed that their bugs changed from one season to the next. And that the human's gut microbiome should change from winter to summer to spring. And then a new study came out a Stanford study that showed that the bugs in the soil that attached to a ginseng root in this study actually had the same benefits as the ginseng root. And there was a synergy between the bugs affecting the quality of the function of the herb, which means that it's not just the plant. It's not just the biochemistry of the plant. It's a synergy between the microbiology and the plant, just like it's a synergy between our microbiome, which makes us think and act and do a bunch of stuff we probably don't want to do, like eat and crave Snickers bars or whatever. But it's the same kind of a relationship. So when you take a plant out of the ground and you spray it or with pesticides, or you know, you kill half the intelligence and benefit of that plant. In the same way, when you take an herb and you take an extract of that and use alcohol to create a sterile extract, which is basically sterile, you're getting potent biochemistry, but you lose a part of the intelligence, which is why at LifeSpa, I'm all about using the whole plant, organic, the plant, grind it up, put in a capsule, and take it in its whole natural, you know, FDA certified, organic tested, heavy metal tested form. But the point is it has to be, we have to have the bugs in it to make it alive, to help make, restore, and inoculate your gut with the right bugs in the right season so you can dissipate heat better every summer and boost immunity better every winter and decongest you every spring. And that's what these bugs do in our gut. And that's why it's so important for us to eat seasonally, because part of the circadian rhythms, because that's what you think about ancient, you know, people, they had no choice but to eat seasonally, right? This is how you had to do it. And we were constantly changing our microbial guard, the inoculating our gut with new bugs for every season. And we had huge amount of diversity. A study, I'll just touch on it a minute. It came out of, it just published a couple weeks ago, came out of Utah and New Mexico. And they had some ancient poop samples that were in a museum for 100 years.
Oh, wow.
And they finally figured out a way to measure the microbiome with this ancient poop in some museum in New Mexico. And they did it, and they found that the diversity of the bugs in the poop of these ancient humans, 1,000 years old, was dramatically different. You know, numerous species that they had in their gut were just missing in the modern human's gut. And the diversity, which means more different kinds of bugs in the gut, was dramatically less in the modern human than in the ancient human. And it was so dramatic that the Stanford researcher said, this is a extinction event, that this is showing that in the last 1,000 years, we've lost such microbial diversity, we're actually losing our resiliency, our immune response. Think of things like COVID and how vulnerable we are now, where once we were seemed to be way more resilient. That's probably a debatable fact, because you know the Native Americans got clobbered when the white people came and everything. But it is what they're saying is an extinction event. So it is. It's just really interesting how important it is for us to inoculate the gut in a seasonal circadian manner with the right seasons, with the right bugs at the right season. But also, you know, it all boils down also to the day-night cycles and how critical they are for our optimal health as well.
Yeah, I love that. And maybe we can dive into that, because there's sort of three traits that we would think about in Ayurveda, right? The Vata, the Pitta, and the Kapha, right? And these are, when you're being introduced to Ayurveda, these are very foreign terms, but they're really kind of easy to understand because they work on an archetypal level, right? Now, drilling down into how they work in the body and how it all functions at these deep scales is, I mean, it's a science that you can study for your entire life, right? And really continue to learn. But the premise, the basic idea is very simple. So maybe you can kind of walk us through Vata, Pitta, and Kapha and how that relates to maybe some of the seasons and the daily cycles.
Yeah, I think everybody experiences it every day of their life. You know, sometimes if you have a partner and you sleep in the same bed, you know, one of you is pulling the covers on and one of them is kicking the covers off. You know, sometimes if you're in the summertime, people are constantly, you know, wearing jackets or not wearing jackets in the winter or the summer. You know, some people are generally cold. This means they have a lot of air. The word for air in Ayurveda is Vata. Basically, it means winter. You have a lot of winter qualities in your body type. So if your body type has a lot of winter in it or Vata in it, you're going to be wintry. You're going to be cold and dry. Now, nature knew that if you're a cold and dry person, living in a cold and dry place like Vermont in January, eating ice cream and cold ice smoothies every morning for breakfast, you're gonna get extra cold and dry because you stacked a whole bunch of cold. But nature had a plan for that, which was the harvest, which is why the squirrels eat nuts and seeds, which are warmer, heavier protein, higher fat, that insulate you from the cold and the dry. So that's one body type, is the cold body type that's always wanting to put a jacket or a hat on. And then comes springtime, which is beautifully the response to cold and dry is wet, rainy, muddy season. So nature had a plan for winter, which was called spring. And that spring is called kapha, which means to cough or to congest. So that's what happens in the spring. It's rainy, muddy, congested. Go for a hike in the spring and you're gonna get muddy feet, guaranteed, right? Pretty much anywhere, because the earth holds on to more water. Well, kapha is the quality of holding on to more water. So if you're a body type that's more kapha, more spring-like, you're gonna be a heavier, easier going, calmer, you know, gain more weight, maybe more congested, mucus producing, asthma, kind of breathing issues, things like that. Maybe even a little lethargic, maybe even depressed if you get overly kapha or out of balance, right? Compared to the vata, air, which is going 90 miles an hour, thinking really fast, go, go, go. This is the other side of the coin. Calm, easygoing, heavier set, thick. You know, they're the linemen and the football players and the you know, the halfbacks of the court, you know, or the little vata running backs, you know, going really fast. And then there's summer, which is the antidote for spring. When it gets really wet and rainy and muddy and congested, nature gives us summer, which dries it all out, which is perfect. And the harvest for, I should say, the harvest for the spring to antidote the rainy and muddy mucus-making qualities of spring, or kapha, is the harvest. You know, dandelion roots and burdock roots and berries and leafy greens and spring greens. You know, the deer are digging holes in everybody's lawn in the spring to dig up those roots, which are bitter and astringent, to dry out the mucus, right? So nature's just got this plan for everything, and that's Ayurveda, the study of that. And then summer is hot, right? And the antidote to the heat is cool fruits and vegetables. So nature had a plan for that, which is just to give us these foods that are cooling. In fact, instead of having to cook those foods, the foods are cooked on the vine during the summer months. So when you put them in your mouth, you don't have to cook them inside of you to heat you up in a hot summer. Because if you're a hot body type in a hot season, eating hot, spicy food and fermented foods, which use lactic acid fermentation, which increases the acidity in your body, which makes you even hotter. So if you're eating like 20-ounce bottles of kombucha or lots of fermented foods, or beer or wine or alcohol or margaritas or barbecue or coffee, which is very acidic, all these things, you have a hot body type and a hot season, eating hot, spicy food and fermented foods, you're going to overheat and become inflamed and irritable and angry, and maybe skin rashes and things like that. And then nature says, hey, I got a plan. Just eat the stuff I grow and you're going to be good. And now we have all this amazing science to back that up. So it's pretty neat.
I love that. And you basically just described my whole journey, right? I mean, I'm very pitta, right? Very fire-based, like that you mentioned. And in our culture, right? I mean, alcohol is not only okay, it's celebrated, right? It's a part of our sort of Western culture. So there was alcohol, there was coffee, which I love the bitterness and the taste of coffee, right? But that caffeine and coffee as a whole, not too great for my system. And then there's a lot of other things like peppers. I love sort of spicy things, right? And ginger, even though a little bit of ginger could be okay, I would love ginger. There's all these sort of things that were driving up my pitta. And so I was becoming out of balance, and I had no idea why, because look, again, going back to the science, a little bit of red wine is really good for you, they say. A little bit of coffee every day is really good for you, they say. And this is not false. It's just for me, they were driving me further and further out of balance, especially because I didn't have the understanding of how to flush some of this pitta, how to bring on some more kapha and bring balance to my system. And so I was dry and hot, and skin was a little dry, right? So I had this vata imbalance, I had this pitta imbalance. And so I was kind of stuck. And this is where Ayurveda has really given me a map for how to think about, how do I eat to balance out some of these qualities that I run hot in, right? And I love that you mentioned it's not just these physical symptoms, it's also the mental and emotional side of things, right? You think of the sort of the hothead, right? Or the dragon, right? Spitting fire, right? Like this is what would happen. The anger, the frustration, the irritability would increase. And when vata, my air quality, would be out of balance, I wouldn't sleep as well. I'd be going a million miles an hour. And those are the exact things that, well, we celebrate that in our society. Go hard, go fast, work harder, do more, right? And so basically I was needing to do everything opposite to what I was doing in my life. And there wasn't a lot of Western science that could help me understand that. That's what Ayurveda just really drilled into me. And it made sense. Right. When I finally read this stuff and got these concepts, I thought, oh my gosh, you know, it makes so much sense that I've been having these symptoms and these traits that I've been wanting to balance out. I've been doing it all wrong. So there's a part of this too, this vata pitta kapha that, so let me actually back up. So you mentioned that we have a body type or a constitution and we primarily run one of those, right? But we are composed of all three, correct? So maybe you can just kind of walk me through how that works and then how you work as a practitioner when you see people out of balance.
Well, you know, your body type is kind of, you know, in Ayurveda, it's all based on the kind of the fundamental elemental components like air and fire and earth and water and ether, right? And we all get a little bit of all those based on your genetics. You know, some people are naturally bigger, easier going and heavier set. Some people are hot and, you know, fiery and competitive and driven. I always think of like the cavemen people, the, you know, the vata body type. They're the artistic, you know, highly sensitive, a lot of radar, feel everything. They can kind of, they're the seers, the shamans, but they're also writing in beautiful art on the walls of the cave. You know, the kapha cave people are sitting by the campfire, communicating and connecting and singing songs and just talking and just chilling with each other. And they're really about community, the kapha, because they're easygoing and they love people. And the pitta types are the ones that are, you know, banging through a wall, putting a deck on the cave, overlooking the valley, making all this racket. And, you know, the kapha types are going like, will you like stop with the whole cave expansion thing and just come here and sit down and drink and eat and have a party? And the vatas are still busy, you know, drawing the stars on the wall. So it sure gives you an idea of how they all go. Now we all have a little bit of all those, but we end up oftentimes with a predominance, right? So if you're predominantly pitta, fire, competitive and driven, then what season do you have to be a little bit careful of? Well, summer. If you're a hot person in a hot season, eating hot, spicy food, very competitive and driven, exercising in the middle of the hot day, whatever, you're going to overheat and then aggravate. And that can cause inflammation, has the word flame in it, right? If you're a kapha body type, easygoing, calm, and you love eating and communicating and chilling, you don't really like exercising that much because you're just like easygoing and calm. My daughter was very kapha. I was like you, Jason Pitta, and I would ask her, I say, hey, you want to go for a run? And she would look at me and go, why? You know, you're like, right. why would you do that? And I'm going, you know, running is good for you, you know, but she didn't want to do that. So that's kapha. Like, you got to give them a ball to play and then they'll run, you know, you got to give them a reason. And so they're easygoing and they're calm. But if you're a kapha body type, easygoing, calm, congested, and you give them mac and cheese and pizza, which are congestive mucus producing foods, right? And they're not exercising, they can come easily congested and have asthma and breathing problems or gain more weight, things like that, right? So the antidote is what nature would harvest in that season, which is the leafy greens and the sprouts and the berries and the root vegetables, right? The bitter roots. And come vata, same kind of thing. Vata is a body type that is cold and dry. And so that cold and dry body type is got more of that cold, dry air quality to it. So you have to be careful. If you're a vata body type, you're more sensitive. You have a lot of radar. You feel everything. And therefore your nervous system, because it's air, if you're overstimulating it, which our culture does really easily, we become easily overstimulated and deplete our reserves. You need energy to be calm. You need energy reserve to sleep at night. So if you are highly, you know, aware, lots of radar, which means you feel everything, you could easily burn your fuel and exhaust yourself and not have the energy to be calm. Therefore, you get anxious, not have the energy to go to sleep because you don't have that sedating quality anymore. And you can find yourself having difficulty sleep. So that's why nature provided the antidote, which was the soups and the stews and the warm cooked foods and the nuts and the seeds of winter to help give you that antidote for that extreme. So if you are a vata body type predominantly, you need to eat really more aggressively or consciously the winter grocery-less foods, the stuff that's harvested in the winter. And in the summer, if you're pitta, that's your season. In the spring, if you're kapha, that's your season to be on the straight and narrow. Everybody should eat according to the season, but your body type is like the owner's manual of the car. It says, you know, you should change your oil every so often and then rotate the tires every so often, because this is the prescription for keeping that body type in balance. As opposed to, doesn't mean that because you're pitta, you should only eat pitta pacifying foods, right? Because that's only one season's worth of food. And nature has a nutritional cycle that takes a year to eat. So everybody would change, but based on your type, you would say, I'm pitta, you're pitta, Jason. So we're in the season, the summer now, where we need to be eating the cooler, bitter, astringent, sweeter foods that are harvested this time of the year. And we can still have some spicy food. We can still have some more acidic foods, but that shouldn't be the predominant food you eat. Otherwise, you can pay the price of inflammation. Kaphas get congestion because too much kapha mucus production, and vatas get anxious and worried. And that's the risk they take.
Yeah, and I love that, you know, we can think about it in terms of diet, and that's a really predominant way that we can address this. And there's also the other aspects, right? The actions that we take, you mentioned exercise, as well as the mindsets that we get caught in, right? The mind loops that we might run, the patterns that we might not become aware of. So we can become aware of how we're walking into the world, the types of thoughts and emotions that we're having, right? And we can work on that end too. This is something that I've really brought more awareness into my life in terms of exercise, right? Love exercise. So as an athlete, just enjoy moving my body. And for me, it is a really good thing to do on a regular basis. But now that we're in the summer, going for a run, as you mentioned, outside with my shirt off, getting all this extra sun, going for 5 mile runs, probably not the greatest thing to do on a regular basis. So, you know, this is where I can bring in some more of like the yin yogas, right? We can do soft movements, the Tai Chis, the Qigongs, or even just a regular yoga, but maybe not the hot yogas, right? Where I'm going to be running the temperature up to 100 degrees and doing yoga in a sweaty room, right? These are small shifts in behavior that for me made a huge difference over time. And I don't drink coffee anymore. If I do, it'll be a little bit of really high quality decaf coffee, so I'm not, you know, going high with the caffeine. The peppers and the spices, kind of put a kibosh on those a little bit, even though I love them. It'll be for special occasions, right? The fermented drinks, the champagnes and the wines and the beers, right? Can't do those as often. And to some degree, it's been a little restrictive, right? Because I had to change my patterns. But the benefits after the patterns become shifted, benefits are so far outweigh, you know, the costs that I was paying. And ultimately, I just fall into new patterns that are a little bit more healthy, that bring in a little bit more balance. So aside from some of those things, what does Ayurveda show us that we can do as ways to sort of maintenance cycles, right? Taking the car in to get an oil change every season. There's ways, and I know you have this through your Colorado Cleanse, which gives you some of these simple tools to shift some of this stuff. But what are some of those ways that we can shift some of these as we change seasons?
Well, it's an interesting point. You know, Ayurveda says that the disease starts at the changeover between the seasons. So it's an important transition, and we celebrate that with the equinox solstices and things like that. And it's really an important time of year to be aware of what's really happening. You're going from a very dry, cold season to a very wet season. And if you don't transition properly, you could either become overly dry, and that can cause, you know, to the extent you get dry in the cold winter, if you don't do it right, to the extent you can make extra reactive mucus, because your sinuses and respiratory and intestinal tract are made of mucus-making membranes. That's what they do. They make mucus. And if you make too much mucus because you irritate the lining, That creates indigestion. It creates a boggy intestinal tract, and your first line of defense is the skin that lines your intestinal tract. So Ayurveda is all about making sure that the skin of your intestinal tract stays healthy. And that happens if you just do what we said a minute ago, which is to eat seasonally, because it automatically takes care of you. You know, the warm, heavy, oily foods of winter unctuate your intestinal tract in a dry season, so you never get too dry. You know, the fiber that we harvest in the fall for the winter are soluble fibers, slimy fibers, oatmeal, flax, chia. All the seeds are harvested in the fall. Put them in water, they become slippery and slimy. You put them in your gut, that'll antidote your gut from ever getting dried out during the wintertime, which we know our outside skin gets dried out, right? So nature had a plan for all this. And then in the spring, when it's really, then you have all this more mucus and you're creating more mucus, nature says, I'm going to clean up your gut with all the bitter dandelion, burdock roots, Oregon grape, and clean all the little villi so your intestinal tract's all scrubbed clean. And then, of course, the summer keeps you from being flaming again. And if you know, summer is interesting because it's hot and dry, right? And winter is cold and dry. So nature's response to summer of hot and dry is cold, but it's also dry. So what accumulates is the dryness. And as we know, as we age, what do? We dry out. So you could say that what you're really protecting against as we age to antidote the aging process would be to not let yourself dry out. And that means don't let yourself get, you know, dehydrated. Don't let yourself get dried out. Don't, like you said, go for hot runs in a hot season with your shirt off. If you're a hot body type, you know, think, you know, twice about doing stuff like that. That was actually my first book, Body, Mind, Sport. It was all about saying, you know, if you're a Vata body type, should you be doing, you know, real aggressive, hardcore, vigorous endurance athletics? Because it's just pushing this Vata, very sensitive body type, which is also thinner and less dense by nature. You know, can you push it too hard? They're also really, really good at yoga because they're flexible, because they're air-based, right? Versus fire-based or earth-based. So what's really interesting is that the Vata types are really good at yoga. So they do yoga all day long and they're really good at it. And then they get injured because they're taking their already flexible body and making it super flexible. Where their husbands or whatever, spouse, partner, or whatever, are more kapha, let's just say. And they're the ones in the gym pumping iron, trying to get bigger muscles, but their bigger muscles are stiff and rigid. And what they really should be doing is the yoga. And the Vata types who are thin and frail, who are super flexible, should be actually lifting some iron to antidote the weak link that they have. But we don't do that. We do what we think we're better at. You know, you're Pitta, so you're good at running with your shirt off. I'm just kidding. You know, in the summer and pushing and being competitive and drive. I can push harder. I can do it. Well, that inflames and burns you out. Yeah, Vata types are really flexible, so they get super good at yoga, and then they get injured because they've overstretched an already flexible system. They need muscle and structural strength. And the kapha types, the big heavy set ones, they're not very flexible by nature. And what they actually probably should be doing is go to yoga class. You know what I mean? So it's just really interesting. But it's interesting to know when you have it, when you know what your body type is, you go, okay, how do I keep this thing in balance? Because you only get one car, right? When you get one in the beginning, and that's it. You don't get to trade it in every 3 years. This is it. So we got to keep it in balance and have it run for a whole lifetime.
Well, and the thing I love about Ayurveda too, and I've talked to Dr. Vasant Lad about this, and because he's in the same camp as you are, which is kind of like this educating the Western mind, right? And how to think about Ayurveda. And there's these crossover kind of ideas that we need to make happen. But Ayurveda works with functional medicine. It can work alongside any integrative naturopathic medicine, chiropractic care. It can even traditional medicine, right? If you're somebody that really tends to lean on the pharmaceutical side of things, Ayurveda can still support that as well. It's not at opposition to any of these things. It is in full support, and it can offer ideas and solutions that can complement any of these other practices. And I'm sure that you've seen that with some of your clients where you're working alongside perhaps another approach.
All the time. You know, I think that when you're looking at something that's just simply a study of nature, how could it conflict with anything? You know, it's sort of like Ayurveda is about helping the body do the job for itself. I don't think any medical discipline would argue that point. You know, naturopathic medicine is sort of like, let's help the body do the job in a natural way using natural supplements, but sort of do the job for the body naturally. And Western medicine is, hey, we're going to save your life and we're going to do the job for you at any cost. I look at that as a buffet, and we need to eat off of that buffet as needed, depending on the situation and the condition, and not rule out any one of those tables on the buffet, because you really want something like Ayurveda to say, hey, this is the body type you were given. This is the car you were, 1960 Chevy. This is it. And you got to keep it in balance. And here's how. That's a really smart understanding. And then how to eat, sleep, live, exercise, and sync with those natural rhythms so you go downstream with your car for a lifetime. You break it, doesn't really work that well. You know, Ayurveda has a plan for that, but also, you know, Western natural medicine does too, using, you know, bioidentical herbs or bioidentical hormones or extracts of herbs that are more potent biochemically, but you lose the intelligence that Ayurveda would with the microbes we talked about. And Western medicine would be drugs to do it for you at any cost. And a lot of times we need that as well. So I just think it's about really understanding that all these systems really need to work together, and they really do. And that's how I practice. I have medical doctors I work with all the time and constantly working in conjunction with other practitioners to make a team to support, you know, their goals and their desires and health.
Well, Ayurveda is so vast in its wisdom and its knowledge, and which is probably why you have thousands and thousands of articles on your site. I mean, there's touch points like Marma. All kinds of herbs and remedies that can be used there. There's medicated ghees and types of massages and tongue scraping. And I know you cover a lot of this. So I just want to give at least an overview of just some of the things that Ayurveda touches upon. Breathing, types of breathing that can cool or heat. It's amazing what Ayurveda has unleashed. It's overwhelming at first, but I think as you get the concepts down, it just starts to make so much sense. And of course, with sites like yours, you can start to pick and choose what you're going to learn about. There's a couple questions I have for you here as we wrap up. One, what is, so for me, as a Pitta person, I've really fallen in love with neem, right? Neem is not something that I was taken before. I only got introduced to it through Ayurveda and how amazingly beneficial it is for me topically, internally. Neem is fantastic solution for that heat. I'm curious if there's some other things like just herbs, like triphala is another great example that many people can benefit from. I'd love for you to just maybe chat about some herbs or kind of remedies that are generally used by pretty much anybody that can be beneficial.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I'm a big fan of using herbs seasonally. You know, neem is a seasonal summer herb, very cooling, it's a refrigerant. It works by, they call it the village pharmacy, where you just go to the doctor and they give you neem for pretty much anything because it works on so many different things. And I was like, how is it that this leaf of a tree, it's not anything fancy, how could it be so incredibly effective? Well, then I found studies that showed that it actually works on biofilm, which is like the plaque on your teeth, little pockets of bad bacteria.
I didn't know this.
Accumulate and become problematic and become real problems, and they mess with your microbiome. And that's why they call neem the queen of the skin, because it heals the skin inside and outside. It's antiseptic for the bad bugs, breaks up biofilm, so it gives all the bugs an equal playing field, so you don't have this one pocket of these really not great bugs taking advantage. So that's kind of how it works, which is kind of really cool. My other favorite herb in the summer is an herb called Brahmi, or Centella Asiatica, or Gotokola. I grow that in my garden every year. It's just a beautiful leaf. It's sweet, and it's a cooling agent for the skin. We put it in our skincare product because it's so good for the inner skin and outer skin. You eat it for the inner skin, and it's also a lymphatic mover. So it helps, and it's also Brahmi means, we have something called Brahmi brain, which is for the brain. Brahmi is the classic herb for brain function, mental clarity and focus, and making sure your brain doesn't get inflamed. You know, your brain dumps 3 pounds of plaque and trash out of your head every year while you sleep. And it dumps it out through these brain lymphatics that are newly discovered in Western medicine. Ayurveda knew about them a long time ago, thousands of years ago. But the Brahmi actually helps move those brain lymphatics out and helps you sleep at night. So you take a couple of Brahmi capsules or a couple of Brahmi tea before you go to bed at night, you sleep like a baby, but you get the benefit of the brain lymphatic drainage support which is critically important because now we know that, when those brain lymphs get congested, you get a little brain fog, cognitive decline, inflammation, infection, anxiety, depression, and even autoimmune concerns are a mechanism for how the lymphs in the brain can actually cause autoimmunity, which is pretty interesting. That's literally buried in the medical journals. But, you know, when you kind of put the two together, the ancient wisdom in Ayurveda, you go, wow, this is what they knew thousands of years ago, and we're just beginning to discover that now. So those are two really good summer herbs. Winter herbs that have the right bugs for the right season, right? Again, ashwagandha, everybody's probably heard of that herb. It's a warm, heavy, sweet root that's harvested in the fall for winter eating. People would put it in their soups and their stews in ancient times, and really, really great herb to build the nervous system up and strengthen the nervous system. You mentioned triphala, which is a great herb for the winter, because the winter is when it's dry and our intestinal tract gets dry, our skin gets dry, and triphala is a great tonifying agent for the intestinal skin and heals and repairs and supports the environment of your intestinal skin. So you have better good bowel movements, but also more importantly, better intestinal function. And then of course in the spring, you know, this is the bitter roots and you know, dandelion is a great herb. You know, like I said, Oregon grape, all the bitter roots are harvested. There's one called kutki in Ayurveda, which is the classic Ayurvedic herb for spring to kind of clean out your liver, decongest your bile ducts. You know, spring is liver cleaning time. You got to get the liver to clean out, and that's the garbage can for the body. So you really have to make sure you get that cleaned with the right herbs like dandelion, kutki. All the leafy greens are really good in the springtime as well. Bile movers, things that are called cholagogues that help the bile flow better, because all the bad food we've eaten over the years creates something called bile sludge, and artichokes are a bile mover. Fenugreek is a bile mover. Fenugreek tea with your food increases the contractibility of your gallbladder by 150%. Turmeric is also a cholagogue or bile mover, increases the contractibility of your gallbladder by 100%. So those are the things you would take. Turmeric root, phenomenal in the spring. Fenugreek tea, phenomenal in the spring. So these are the things you do. You just start kind of tuning into, like, we have a grocery list that I publish every month, and a recipe list, superfood list for every month of the year called the Three Season Diet Eating Guide. And you get it for free, and you get a list of all the herbs and foods and grocery lists for each month of every year. And you also get recipes. And you can just go through the grocery list of spring and go, oh, I like this, I like this. Circle the foods you like in the season that you're in and give yourself permission to eat more of those foods. So start thinking about, how can I eat more of what's in season? And you make a list of them. And then when you go to the grocery store, you just buy more of them. And now you're doing it, you know, sort of very effortlessly. You're hooking yourself up with the right bugs in the right season for your right gut, which supports pretty much everything in Ayurveda. The golden rule of Ayurveda is that the more subtle something is, the more powerful it is. We can't see the microbiome. We can't see those little bugs, but they govern all of your thoughts and cravings and desires. We can't see the circadian rhythms that the birds fly south and migrate with, but those circadian rhythms are now Nobel Prize winning science. They're connected to every cell of our body, which has a biological clock, as you said. And if we're out of sync or out of rhythm with them, we're going to pay a major price for that. And that's, I think, the big news as we started, is you got to get yourself back into circadian rhythm. You really do, because that's, you know, your body waking up at the right time, being hungry at the right time, having energy at the right time, ready to think and be focused at the right time, as opposed to feeling you're completely out of whack and out of sync with the natural cycles.
Yeah, I love that. And again, it's just about making these shifts, right? I mean, I think so often in the West, we're conditioned to find a problem, find some magic pill to solve that problem, or some magic trick or hack. I mean, that's a big one these days, right? To hack your way through things. And Ayurveda is kind of the opposite. It's finding what's out of balance. It's not a problem. It's just out of balance. It's preventing things that we don't like, right? We tend to not like these things, but it's just out of balance. And then the answer is, how do we bring this back into balance? And what I find is that it's just doing these things on a consistent basis, in rhythm, in alignment with the natural world and our bodies and our own constitution. And all of a sudden we can find ourselves back into alignment. And really that's the way I've used Ayurveda. And then there's the deeper aspects, right? To work with a practitioner, to find your constitution and what you're, where you're out of balance and how to find what that is. So I'm just curious with your site, how can people go about figuring out, am I pitta, am I kapha, am I vata? And then consequently doing something about that, and learning to use, you know, herbs that you might sell on your site or elsewhere to bring them back into balance.
Absolutely. I mean, if they go to livespa.com, right on the homepage, there's a body type questionnaire, and you can take, it's a free interactive quiz. You can take it with your, you know, husband, spouse, wife, partner, kids. It's really great to know who your kids are before it's too late. And then it'll print you out a report of what your body type is, but also guide you through, it's all for free, guide you through information about your type, like what to do, what diet to eat, what your qualities are, what your likes and dislikes are, what your predispositions are, how you're gonna get out of whack if you did get out of whack, and how to bring it back into balance. So there's a lot of information there, it's all for free. Just go to my website. If you can't find it, just type in body type quiz, and it'll pop right up on the search bar. And you can get right into that whole thing. And it's a great place to start. And it's exciting. It's really fun to see the differences, particularly if you, sometimes it's fun to have your spouse or partner take the quiz for you, who know you really well. And you're like, no, you think you're one way, but they might think that you're not quite the same as you think you are. It's sort of fun to see how people perceive us versus how we perceive ourselves. It's kind of interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny. These qualities show up in our personality. They show up in our physical characteristics, right? I mean, the shape of our eyes and the whites of our teeth and the tongue and the skin tone and the body shape. I mean, it's truly amazing. And this, to me, is how we know that Ayurveda is connected to the whole system. It understands the connection between these fundamental energies and or elements and how our body, mind, and is coordinated. I mean, it's truly, truly amazing. And again, the deeper I go into Ayurveda, the more amazed I become, and the more respect and honor I have for the long, long history, and that it seems like it's making a little bit of a resurgence, right? I mean, maybe not even a little bit. I mean, in the last, 30 or 40 years, as you mentioned, things have changed drastically. I mean, we're now having deeper conversations. More people have heard of Ayurveda in the West, and sites like yours are becoming ever more popular. And I think part of it is because not only the truth that it holds and the wisdom that's there, but also because some of the stuff we're doing here in the West just isn't working. We're trying a lot of things, and we get some success sometimes, but not other times. And so we're left kind of still questioning what's real, what's true. And eventually we land on things like Ayurveda and many of the other practices from the Eastern traditions. And we go, there's something here. So if you haven't explored Ayurveda, if you're curious about it, I can say it's well worth the time to invest in just a little bit of learning that comes from the beginning of this new way of thinking and some of the new terminology. But ultimately it's very fundamental. It's very simple. And hopefully Dr. John has illustrated that today. So Dr. John, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your wisdom and giving us a brief but very thorough introduction to Ayurveda.
Thanks for having me, Jason. Really appreciate it.
All right. And thank you all for joining us on Awaken the Healer Within. We'll see you next time.